All right, Vern, let's have a conversation about this, my man.
You haven't bought cigarettes, have you? I know you've been clean. But it's coming.
No, but man, I remember that sweet nectar. I'll tell you what.
That's right. I mean, you could use that nectar after this last week at home.
No, stay away. 2024, okay. Nobody smokes anymore.
That's true. So let me ask you this, Vern. Well, let's just start with the weekend as a whole. What was the pulse of the Royals fan base during this weekend?
Of the fan base? Wow. Well, I was very agitated after Saturday's game. Agitated at everyone. You know, yesterday didn't bother me as much. I don't think it's a choke job to get carved up by Blake Snell. You know, to piggyback what you guys were just talking about, I had this caller, a great Royals fan, but I think her opinion reflects exactly what you were just talking about, Bob. She says, Vern, I called up on opening day, and getting back with this Royals team in 2024 felt like getting back with an ex, where the entire time in the relationship, I'm wondering, have they really changed? She calls up after game 155 and says, see, this is what I was talking about on opening day. I wonder if they've really changed. And that only added to my annoyance, my frustration with just the homestand, right? The worst homestand. I mean, as bad of a homestand as you can imagine, in the batter's box, on the mound, in the field, and in the stands. The fact that the sentiment is still, well, yeah, I know we've watched 155 games and the pitching staff's awesome and the defense is elite and they've, you know, Bobby Witt Jr.'s put together the greatest season this franchise has ever seen, the greatest season this building of Kauffman Stadium has ever seen. Royals are above 500 for the first time since 2016. Yeah, but are they really different? That skepticism, to me, is reflected in 1.6 million people turning out over the course of a season, the biggest crowd since 2018 when they were hot garbage. You fell short of that attendance mark. So the sentiment of the fan base, listen, the people that are at the games are, like me, annoyed with the offense, sad for the players, but very thankful that this team remains in possession of a postseason spots. And we're also, I think, I can speak for the season ticket holders that have been showing up. And listen, that crowd yesterday was awesome. That was a garbage atmosphere as far as the weather, as far as Blake Snell, as far as what the offense was giving you. But the 24,000 that turned out in that spitting rain were waiting for a reason to get loud. And whenever a base hit happened, they came to their feet. So the crowd yesterday was outstanding. But as a whole, I think the sentiment of the diehards is, boy, this is tough to watch, but I would have signed up for this on opening day. But I think the majority of Royals fans are, you know, kind of rolling their eyes at this team and saying, see, that's why we don't go. Using it as an excuse as to why this city hasn't embraced this team really much this season.
Vern, my biggest concern is now, why are we allowing Frazier, Grossman, Pham, all these guys who aren't going to be here in 3 weeks to get these at-bats when we could be giving these type of at-bats, these learning experience at-bats to MJ and Massey and Garcia? I know they have some more sort of analytics. This is where I think analytics are a waste of everybody's time. Let your young guys take their lumps and learn in these situations. I'd rather see MJ Melendez, for example, strike out in the ninth on Friday night than watching Tommy Pham. Like, this is not doing anything for the development of the organization.
Yeah, I don't know if flailing at more pitches does much for the development of MJ or Massey or Michael or Isbell. Furthermore, are we sure that these guys are a part of the plan?
Well, I know Pham and those guys probably aren't, you know?
Sure, but, you know, last year was the evaluation season, and in that evaluation, you saw what Massey, Melendez, Isbell, and Garcia can be, and you saw their flaws. And they were given opportunities, ample opportunities, in the first half of the season to allow this organization and this front office to see no need to add a Tommy Pham, a Robbie Grossman, and Adam Frazier, but they needed that. They needed those guys to come alongside, dating back to spring training with the Renfros and the Hampsons and the Fraziers, to kind of give this team that Raul Labagna speech. They've been doing it all season. Yet, my response would be, you know, this isn't, and you know this, but this isn't the Dayton Moore Royals, to where, you know, you're our guys and you're going to be here next year and you're going to be here the year after that and we're going to stick with you because we believe in you. No, I mean, you've seen in a year and a half the churning of talent that's already happened from J.J. Piccolo in this front office. I would expect that's only going to continue moving forward. I mean, as I look at the 2025 Royals, while the rotation still seems set with Lugo, Reagan, Singer, Marsh, a Kyle Wright, a Chris Bubich, a Daniel Lynch, as Michael Wacha makes his way to free agency, I look at the offense, and outside of Vinny, Salvi, Freddie, Bobby, Hunter Renfroe, and Wright, other than that, no one, I'm not giving anybody else a spot. Now, I like Kyle Isbell's defense, so that gives him a leg up, but you know, Massey with that back, you know, MJ Melendez with his endless hot and cold streaks, Mikel Garcia, just a dog of a season, man. A very disappointing campaign for Mikel Garcia. I had really high hopes for him. So if you can improve this offseason at third base, at second base, in a corner outfield, at center field, I see no reason why J.J. Piccolo and this organization would have pulled the trigger. So, no, I'm not going to grind these dudes to the finish when their at-bats are telling me they don't warrant it. I mean, Robbie Grossman's giving you a fine at-bat. Yeah, Tommy Pham has struggled in big spots of late. He started off gangbusters, and that's why that team, after that seven-game losing streak immediately following Vinny's injury, that's why the team kind of picked it back up, mm-hmm. because Tommy Pham went 3-for-3 with runners in scoring position. Yuli Gurriel, still, to this day, to me, is the third best bat on this team. But since Tommy Pham's 0 for his last 11 with runners in scoring position, and the team, man, you know, the stats say it all. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, to go back to what you guys were talking about, I'm not reveling in this. You know,
no.
I get no joy, especially when I see the pain on Bobby's face when I want this pitching staff to get their flowers in October. You read what Vahe and Annie Rogers had to say about that clubhouse after the game, where it's just 28 shell-shocked dudes all in their uniforms still after the game, a sight you don't normally see, especially heading into an off day. I take no joy in what's happening, but the stats say it all, so there's no need for me to pile on. Since Vinny went down, they are statistically the worst offense in baseball, and I'm including the Chicago White Sox. I don't need to add anything more to that. That says
wow, they're the worst offense in baseball since Vinny has gone down?
Yeah, they weighted runs create all those nerdy stats, even OPS. You can dive into their OPS, dead last in Major League Baseball dating back to the 30th of August.
Why has Vinny's injury had that kind of just disastrous impact on this team, though, Vern?
If you look at when he went down, it was also during that riptide. So you're facing really good teams that have really good pitching. The riptide ends, and you see a Detroit team that cannot make a mistake. At least A.J. Hinch cannot make a mistake with whichever reliever he chooses. You know, Washington, this Mitchell Parker kid you're going to see, Patrick Corbin, those are some solid lefties. When you lose Vinny, you lose one of the best bats in baseball as far as hitting good pitching. You know, to me, October always comes down to how many good pitchers do you have and how many good hitters that can hit good pitching do you have? To me, you had Bobby, Salvi, and Vinny. They were three of the 15 best hitters in baseball when it comes to the big moments where you're bringing in the big reliever, where your starting pitcher is bearing down and going to execute his best pitch, right? Runners in scoring position, two outs, man in scoring position. That's when the best of the best step up, and Vinny's OPS with two outs and a runner in scoring position, the only batters with a better number are future Hall of Famers like Juan Soto, Jose Ramirez, Salvador Perez, I mean, the best of the best, Shohei Ohtani, former MVPs like Cody Bellinger. So to lose a guy like that, you can't replace that, and you've only continued to see really good pitching. So you add it all up, and what you're seeing is an offense that was always below average. All season it's been below average, but Vinny, Salvi, and Bobby have been putting this team on their back for the first 4.5 months. So when you lose one of those guys that carries the load, who else is going to pick it up, especially when your lineup becomes so much easier to navigate? You lose Vinny, and Bobby's still getting it done, still with an OPS of 850 since Vinny went down, but he's not getting the same type of game-changing opportunities. He's being pitched a lot tougher. And on the flip side, Salvi's OPS is below 600 since Vinny went down. And as you mentioned, Bob, yeah, Salvi, it's so very clear when he steps to the dish, much like it's been for the past 5 years. He understands, if I don't do damage, damage is not going to be done. Maybe he's trying to do a little bit too much. It was clear he was frustrated yesterday. And then you read the dispatch from inside the clubhouse, and you can understand Salvi was still quite upset after the game. Disappointed in the line of questioning, but also disappointed in his own performance.
All right, Vern, in my hands I hold an 89 Tops featuring Len Dykstra.
89, they went in 93, so I'll say he's still with the Mets.
Yes, you're right about that. There you go. You're one for
Thank
one.
You. All right.
Was he the one we lost? Didn't he go? Didn't Dykstra go?
That's
wild?
Nails. No, that's the one. Like, is he in jail?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's a scumbag. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, he's a well. Look at him. I mean, there's his picture.
Yeah, right.
I mean, his name's
Lenny.
Football player.
Yeah. 89 Tops again. A gentleman by the name of Mike Morgan.
Mike Morgan, righty, either with the Dodgers or A's. I'll say he is a Dodger.
You're wrong. Orioles.
Not even.
Wrong.
All right. One for two.
All right. Let's see if you can be a Hall of Famer or a borderline Hall of Famer. I've got a 90 Fleer that features Jeffrey Leonard.
Oh.
Yeah. Jeffrey Leonard. I'm thinking Daryl Hamilton. Jeffrey Leonard. Outfielder with the Reds.
Outfielder with the Mariners.
Close. You got the first one. That's all that matters.
Yeah, you got the first one.
Yeah, the first one was kind of a layup.
Last text I'll give you to give, 10 seconds on what to say here. Vern, do you have any hope and positivity for the final week of the season?
Yeah, they're in possession of a playoff spot. Another reason why people tune in, oh, Vern, you are letting them off the hook. Why are you not screaming? How can I scream when they're in possession of a postseason spot?
Correct.
Okay, if they gag it away, maybe I'll get angry. But even then, they're going to finish the season with 83, 84, 85 wins. They got you to football season. They were a lot of fun to watch. Bobby signed. I just refuse to look back on 2024 with any sort of frustration, dismay, regret. Man, this has been a blast.
Yep.
It could be a bumpy finish, but I'm going to try and enjoy it.
What are we talking about a week from today?
Playoffs.
Yeah, hopefully a trip to Baltimore. Houston, whatever. Just hopefully they're getting on a bird, flying somewhere, getting ready for, what, Michael Wacha maybe starting game one, depending on if Cole Reagans pitches that final game. You could go Wacha game one, Lugo game two, and then if you need Reagans in game three.
So
that's what I hope we're talking about.
So how many wins over these next six games is it going to take to close this thing out?
Boy, oh boy. Tarek Skubal has a start, and then they have three against Chicago. So you know what? I don't know if I'm looking at Detroit right now. Man, you know what? Win four games. Do it yourself. To look at Detroit, to look at Minnesota as they have helped mightily of late. No, man, put this on the Royals. Go 4-2 in these final six games. That's what I think it'll take. Get them to 86 wins. That at least needs to be the Royals fans' mindset. For as much as we want the Twinkies or the Tigers to give it to us, no, you got to go win this series in Washington, and you're going to have to beat a good pitcher in Atlanta. You did this to yourself by gagging against Detroit and San Francisco.
All right, Vern, enjoy the off day, and then the grind of six straight starts on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, brother.
Thanks, guys.
I love you. No problem.